Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, May 25th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Please visit the LL Research websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring blogs, forums, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research, and maybe Jim McCarty. Is Jim with us tonight, Carla?
Jim is with us tonight. He just showed up.
Okay. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
Okay. Very good. Well, did you guys have a good week?
We had a lovely week. We really did. Pretty uneventful. I was thinking, well, what can I tell her we did this week? And I couldn't come up with anything. Jim, can you? You know, Jim mowed the lawns. I worked on the computer.
Went by so quickly, it's hard to remember what happened. It was beautiful weather. Great to be alive. Nothing significant, just life as usual, moving through it with hopefully a little bit of grace and joy.
Okay. Well, I know you both are very good at that. That's for sure. So, okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start then with our opening riff. And this is a little different this time. This is from the Aaron Kuo Dialogues, page 123, Being versus Doing. What is service? It is not a doing, but a being. It is an attitude and a way of approaching the world and yourself with love. Now, I know these are inspiring words, but the reality is that it's much harder to do it than to speak of it. Each time that you fall into that trap of mistaking service for a specific kind of doing and see yourself attached to that thing, might I suggest that instead of looking at this human who has made that unskillful choice, you find acceptance for that human. What is behind that grasping at service in this specific way or that specific way? Can you begin to see the layer of fear under there? And as you allow loving self-acceptance to replace that fear, then you become love again, and you become service, service to all beings.
Thanks, Monica. I heard that earlier this week at a time when I was having a particularly difficult time physically and flat on my back, I mean to tell you, just not able, you know, to enjoy even sitting up and giggling with my friends. It just wasn't there. And I got over it, I'm happy to say. It was just a momentary flu, one of those 24-hour things. But on top of everything else, it really laid me low. So it was so wonderful to come to these words, because I really wasn't able to perform any outer service at that time. It was not there for me. It just could be. And I've always said, I've always meant that it's so much more important to be than to do. And the best thing I ever could do for the planet is not an outer service like teaching or channeling or writing books. The best thing I can possibly do is be love. Allow love to flow through me. Allow myself to rise in tuning to that place where I know that all is well, and I am so empty of attachment to any outcome that I'm content to rest in love. And that was what I was doing. That was what I was working fairly hard on all day, because when you feel really rotten, you have to tune yourself up to you know, just to the level of everybody else that's running around going crazy trying to get everything done. So I had a long way to go, you know, climbing out that mountain of, you know, don't be depressed. Don't take it hard. Rest in the knowledge that this is what it is for today, and that you are still capable of service to others. Because I have, ever since I can remember, had a driving need to be of service to others, and mostly the Creator, to be devoted, to spend time in devotion to the Creator, and to bring the Creator into everything that I do. But when it actually, the push comes to shove and I'm there on the bed and that's all I can do, I'm thinking to myself, you know, what good am I? I'm not writing, I'm not channeling, I'm not doing my usual thing. And then, of course, I'd catch myself and pull myself back out of it. But I had spent more than enough time there to realize that it's the easiest thing in the world to get down on yourself for one reason or another, because you're not doing your service, the service that you came to do. And I can't tell you how many people have come to Jim and me over the years saying, what am I supposed to do? What is my service? Or, I have a service I want to perform, and it doesn't seem to be possible. I've got to have a job and pay the bills. So it's just a hectic workaday world, and I don't think any of us escapes that. What we need to do is escape into the silence long enough to get our feet on under us, metaphysically speaking, to know who we are metaphysically, to remember what we believe in, and to call ourselves, call to ourselves the energy of those beliefs. Do I believe in love? Yes. Okay. Think about love. Think about loving from your heart. And then you can ask yourself, do I believe in light? Yes, I do. I look out and I see the sun and it's so wonderful, and I listen or hear or see so many bright, shining people, and I see their light. And I know that it is all about that light and letting the light shine through. And gradually, you know, I can allow myself to let the negatives fall away, but it's a conscious choice. So I want to share with everybody the places I've been, and this is definitely one of them. I need to remember, we all need to remember, that we're good, we're really worthy, we're part of the Creator, and all we need to do is just allow that to come forward and let the rest of the world recede, whether it's on a long walk, whether it's doing gardening, which I love to do and used to be able to do for hours, and what a meditation that is, or whether it's a form of meditation, whatever you choose to use in order to tabernacle with the Creator. It's so important to intend at least to get there at least once a day. Jim, do you have anything to add to that? You are a busy, busy guy. How do you stay close to the Creator all day and remember that, you know, it's not paying the bills, that's your service, it's who you are?
I constantly have to remind myself, because I find myself running into situations where I lose my center and I lose the gracefulness with which I try to go through my day. So for me, it's a series of reminders and remembering that there is a more centered way, a more loving way to approach what I'm doing than perhaps the more hassled way that I've just found myself in the midst of. And then bringing myself back, slowing down for a moment, maybe taking a couple deep breaths and just trying to relax. My little mantra that I use many times is relax and enjoy. And this is something that it's kind of hard to do in the world we have nowadays, because we're all so busy with so many things to do. And it's so easy to get out of alignment with the flow of things, with that easy flow that when you're in it, you know that you know you're in it. You know that things are going well, and that you don't have to think about what you're doing so much as to just to do, because you're doing from that place of centeredness, of the beingness that you were talking about. So for me, I still remind myself, and that's a good thing, because if I weren't able to remind myself, then I would truly be forgetting what is really important.
That's so true. Monica, how do you keep it together?
Oh. Well, I'm very happy, very grateful that I have a lifestyle now in which I do have the luxury of time, and I'm able to, you know, being that I work for myself, I'm self-employed, I don't have to punch a time clock or answer to anyone. But for so many years, I did do that, and I remember, and you may remember me emailing you, asking for counseling, for advice, and I felt so stuck. You know, I was in an office environment. I was working as a software engineer for many years, and I remember just sitting there thinking, you know, I would be praying, you know, Lord, is this it? is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Sitting here in front of a computer all day doing programming, you know, I really felt this yearning to be out there in the world, you know, helping people in some way, you know, being of service. And so I think what helped me was just the old adage about bloom where you're planted, and just tried to be of service in the environment that I was in, and just kind of, you know, accept that was the situation that I had at the time, and just try to, you know, when an opportunity presented itself, if there was a way that I could be of service, then do that. But it was pretty limited. And so I think it was a combination of accepting the situation, yet at the same time hanging on to a hope for something that would be more fulfilling, and just being patient. And that day finally did come. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful now that I have a livelihood that is something that is helping people. And so then the next challenge was to learn when to just be receptive and silent, because I'm a very proactive kind of person. I'm like, go out and do stuff. You know, I'm a real doer kind of person. That's my natural inclination. Yeah. So for me, it's like, well, if that's my natural inclination, then I guess that's part of who I am and my service. So, but you know, for me, it's, I guess, one of my lessons right now, or one of my tasks that I've assigned myself on some level, is to, take better care of myself and trust, you know, because I tend to neglect myself and not do the things for me that I need to do, like doing my yoga and all that. And what's happening right now is, as I'm doing those things and nurturing myself more, like gardening and things like that, which I'm very much into my gardening now, I'm finding that things are starting to flow better, and people are coming to me that want the service that I have to offer with my business, instead of me having to go look for them.
Yeah, that's really great. It reminds me of the job I had. You went down in the basement of the library at University of Louisville, and you walked down the corridor to the end of the corridor, and you went into the room called the reproduction room. It sounds rather racy, but it was just the Xerox machine and various ways to reproduce words. And I was the reproduction assistant, which meant that I manned the Xerox machine. And you imagine doing that all day, every day. And the challenge there was very much, you know, bloom where you're planted. But I swear to heaven, I've never had better meditations than I did when I was sorting 49 copies of a 35-page document for somebody in law school. And, you know, it was okay. But I had to fight my way to it. Golly, are some people online here? Am I seeing that, Monica?
We do. Lo and behold, we have live callers who want to be on the show. Oh, that's so awesome. We love you. We love you. We love you. Okay. You ready to take a caller? Oh, I just got to say real quick, I was just thinking about the jokes that must have been going on in that.
Oh, heavens, yes. We heard them all.
I bet you had great jokes. Okay. I'm going to open the line to our first live caller from area code 936. Are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. I am with you, Monica.
Who's this?
My name is David. I am an old friend. I turned 60 in May, and I was there in the beginning.
Oh, my.
I've actually talked to Jim on the phone back in the early 80s.
Hi. Hello again.
I actually was waiting for every issue of The Law of One to come out in its little paperback blue book form way back in the early 80s.
Oh, yes, the 9.5 by 11 one, or 8.5 by 11.
That's how long I have paid attention to these people.
That's genuinely a long time. That's back in the early 80s.
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you what, I will say this, because I know it's archived when it's recorded. These people have done the greatest service to mankind than can be imagined. And as I went into the Bring Forth website today and listened and read what was written there, they wait and expect. It's from within, it's not from without. They look for signs. Everyone looks for signs. It's within. And I just want to tell you what, I love Jim and Carla so deeply.
Well, thank you so much, David.
Is.
That's beautiful.
The sign
we
is
love you, too.
They feel it. And I just wanted to heal Carla. Why I called.
We are so glad you did, David, and we really appreciate you calling in, and that's wonderful, and I can relate. I've got those old blue books, too, quite tattered and highlighted and notated. Did you have any?
I feel old.
Well, I got my books in 1984. Yeah, 1984.
I remember calling Jim. I said, when's the next book coming out? And he said, well, we had one of our members die, and it took me years to find out exactly what happened, you know, but I love these people. God, what a journey.
Mm.
What a service to mankind.
Thank you so much.
I'm sorry. I go to these websites and whatever, and it just seems like they miss a point. It's not outside of yourself. It's within. What's going
on?
You
need to get on those forums and get into the discussions. You know, there are like,
what,
15 or 16 different.
I'm also not, well, I'll just give you a hint. I'll tell you who I am. I'm Star Mystic. I'm an astrologer, what I am, but I've been on there once.
Ah, well, very good. Did you know that Jim and I, one or the other of us always make an entry every day in the Camelot Journal, so you can always keep up with us there.
Well, I'm not sure who Jim is. Or who, I see you because I know you're one of the moderators.
Uh-huh. Monica, you mean? Yeah. Well, just go to Bring Forth and look at the blog. You'll see a picture of Jim and me. We just got it up the other day because Jim's been writing entries, and it didn't seem right just to have my picture there. So we have a picture of us last Christmas. It was really nice to put that up there and get Jim into the mix.
Well, Well, I just wanted to call in and say I love Carla and Jim and Monica. I love you, too. I love everyone. Has anything to do with the raw material? What a wonderful service to mankind, and thank you all.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you so much for sharing, and thank you for so much for calling in. Did you say your name is Star Mystic on the forum?
That on the forum, yes.
Okay. Is it spelled all together, or is there something separating? Because I just tried to find you.
Between Star, and it's spelled M-Z-T-Y-K. As I said, I am an astrologer.
Aha. Okay. We'll have to find you. Well, please feel free to visit us more often and call in whenever you like, and feel free to participate in the discussions, and because I think you just said something very valuable, and we'd love to hear your views.
I'll tell you what, I like to listen to all the young people and everything, and like Jim and Carla, I heard it when they started the show tonight. It was like, well, what are we going to talk about? You know, I think what you need to talk about is that there are people out here like me who are one with you, the law of one. Raw, you know. I didn't understand what was going on when I was a kid. But when I was a young kid, all I could understand was when they was talking about God, I was connecting to some ancient Egyptian experience, and Ra was God to me. And all through my life, I kept looking for Ra. And even during hypnotic regressions, which I was involved in the early 70s, during a deep regression, the voice came through and said, look for Ra. And I found the Ra material, that first book, yellow and blue cover on it, and from then on, I ordered all the blue books from then on that were self-published.
I guess you felt like you'd come home.
I was there. I knew where I was at.
Yeah.
I was connecting from the very beginning.
And we've got somebody else too, don't we, Monica? David, why don't we let the other guy talk a minute?
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in, David. We love
you
too.
The point is good, you know. All is one, and we need to be considering that all the time. Just feel that. Feel that around you. Feel that oneness. It's so true. That's the unity of us all. We are one, and that one thing is love. So who's calling in from 870, Monica?
Hello, are you there? Are you with us? From 870? You're live on the air with us. Can you hear us?
He just went away. Darn, we chased him away. I didn't mean to do that. Darn. I thought he wanted to talk because he'd punched one.
Well, wait a minute. There's another one. Okay, from 936. Hello, are you there?
If you got me, I'm still here.
Oh, that's you. Okay. Well, then, okay, we lost our other caller. Oh, well. Well, David, thanks for calling in, okay? But you can stick around and listen. Okay, thanks, David. Okay, well, whoever that was that called in, if we lost you somehow, there they are. They came back, but okay. Apparently, they don't want to be on the live. They don't want to be live. If you change your mind, just hit the one key, and we'll let you on the show, okay? No problem. All right, we're going to go ahead and go to a question that was submitted by Cyan from the Bring Forth Forum. And Cyan says, a friend of mine and myself were out begging today. Friend had a sign that read unemployed and poor. Mine, one that read good karma and nothing else. I sat there meditating and after a while could tell that often when I called for the universe to offer me money, if it is in the best interest of all participants in the situation, we would get a few coins. So assuming the law of one, plus all things related in terms of morals, ethics, etc., are taken into account, is it wrong to use this stuff to wish for money in such a way? Or is the receiving of money simply a form of other self that hears and replies, or is it more of a forceful compulsion? So, in short, if one begs or otherwise engages in commercial enterprises, is it morally objectionable to use the law of attraction to attract customers similar? Does using these things, that is, the concepts behind the Law of One and its practical application for personal wealth, objectionable? Personally, I feel the answer is all tools are okay if one is able to deal with the repercussions of everyone using said tools, but would like Carla's input. Thank you. This is from Cyan.
I looked, Cyan, around in the raw material, and in session 23, there was a very enlightening question, and Ra said the difference between something infringing on free will and not infringing on free will is if you know that you are manipulating people. If it's an unintended manipulation, it's fine. If it's an overt attempt to manipulate and use other people, it's not. Begging is an ancient and honorable profession. In India, people spend their whole lives doing that. I have always wanted to pay my own bills and haven't had the mindset to dare to live from day to day and trust to providence. I should have that faith, but I always have wanted to secure my place, my little warm chair, and food on the table, and even, you know, when I barely did it, like that job at U of L down in the bowels of the basement at U of L, it just satisfied something in me to be able to have the money in my pocket to pay my bills. That's the way I like to do it. I have nothing against begging. However, the way you're doing it is miles apart from, for instance, I knew one woman that begged for a living, and she would dress like a strumpet, and she was quite pretty, and she would, you know, reveal as much as was legal, and she'd troll lobbies in expensive hotels looking for somebody to pick her up, and she'd usually be successful. Now, that's an overt, you know, intention to use somebody else, and it's not a humble thing at all. So I think the way you're describing doing it, it's honest, it's straightforward, and you're thinking about coins. You're not exactly trying to build an empire here. You're trying to find enough money for your next meal and to find, you know, maybe even shelter for the night. And even in the Lord's Prayer, you know, we don't pray, get us situated for our life. We pray, give us today our daily bread. And so I really would not condemn you in any way or judge you. I would say that it is it's a profession that is not well understood in the West, but you seem to be doing it in a spiritualized manner. Now, to the extent that you become cynical about it and you realize that you're manipulating people on purpose, then to that extent, you need to think about what you're doing. While you're doing it in all innocence and telling the exact truth, you have no money, and you'd like a little help, I think that's okay. Anybody, Monica, Jim, what do you have to add to that?
Go ahead, Jim. I don't think I have anything to add to that.
I would agree with what Carla said, but it's funny. It brings up, it's not a memory for me. It's a projection, I guess you'd say. And I'm not sure where it comes from, unless it's some revelations, end of days possibility. But somehow, throughout my life, I've seen myself in the distant future being in that kind of a situation in a world sort of like, if you remember the movie that Harrison Ford was in, Blade Runner, where things are kind of...
yes, I do.
Futuristic, they're degraded,
dark.
They're it's dark, and
yeah.
Existence is very difficult, and you've got to kind of battle day by day to get by however you can, because the world has fallen apart, and you're a wanderer and a seeker and a traveler through the world, and somehow you've got to make it on a daily basis. And somehow that has always seemed like there's I have an affinity for that, or some draw to that, or some imagination that that might be in my future. So if that's in my future, I hope that I'm successful in getting by day by day, because I think the day by day existence is something that's really on the edge for people. And it really brings the immediacy of life to you, and it opens up your mind in a way that nothing else can. When you have a pantry full of food and a fridge full of food, and you don't have to worry about it for the foreseeable future, it's pretty easy to sit back and to be comfortable in things, and to not be so immediately alert and aware of your surroundings and of the possibilities and of what you need to do to get by, and to really call upon what is important to you. So that brought that little thought back to my mind that has kind of lurked there for many years.
Yeah, Mick, and then there was that incarnation that you remember when you were a troubadour, and you were going from castle to castle and dancing and telling jokes and juggling. Jim juggles in this incarnation, too. He's got the most beautiful clubs that he juggles with, but he has to do it over a bed because they're really pretty, and if they fall on the floor, they get damaged.
Oh, wow.
But at any rate, if you'll think about it, street performers, street artists, and so forth are doing the same thing. They're offering value for money. They're offering a good show, or they're offering pens, or street sellers on the corner, what are they selling, but it's all just a matter of engaging in trade rather than engaging in the money market. And the trade situation is a lot more innocent, if you'll think about it. Here I am and here you are. What can I do for you, and would you like to help me? So it brings us back to the basics. I wish you all good luck, and as long as you are honest as you were in that little letter, Cyan, I see nothing against it. Carry on.
I did just think of one quick thing I'd like to add. I think it's beautiful that Cyan is saying, for the highest good, or essentially, if it's good for all, whoever might be giving me the coins. But also, this, of course, I don't know anything about his or her situation, but he or she is providing an opportunity for others to learn to give.
That's
so
true.
I think that's a nice little plus there. Okay, we're going to move on. And by the way, you are listening to In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. And if you'd like to call in and ask a question live on the air, you can do so by calling 646-595-2294. And be sure and press the 1 key, 646-595-2294. And we're going to move on to a question. This is actually not a question that was submitted as a question. It's just something that was posted on the bringforth.org website as a discussion. It was a series of questions by Siren. And I'm going to go ahead and read it's basically a four-part question, kind of on the same general topic. Do you think time-space is not, shall we say, vibrationally fragmentized, as is space-time, in all its densities of progressive or evolutionary experience? Or do you think that if you move from space-time to time-space, you are automatically in the state of awareness of the one with the Creator? Do you think 6D and or 7D do not partake of space-time? And that's 6th density, 7th density. What is the soul? What is the soul stream? How does this relate to the future higher inner self or the oversoul? How does it fit into the whole mind-body-spirit concept? And what is spirit? A shuttle? Ever considered that both body and spirit are very similar in the sense that they both serve as vehicles of transportation? Could the body be a medium of exploration or experimentation for the mind, thought, to the more outer planes, space-time, aspects of the Creator, creation, and the spirit a shuttle for the inner planes of time-space?
I had to break that one down. You can't answer that question as a unit, as you pointed out. But let me have a go at it, and we'll run out of time before I finish. I'm sorry about that. As to do I think that time-space is not vibrationally fragmentized, I don't think space-time or time-space is vibrationally fragmentized. I think it flows. I think there are quanta from one density to another. I think there are probably small quanta in between for sub-density changes. And I think that it flows with experience, and there's a kind of a meniscus, you know, when you pour milk in a glass and it sits for a bit, there's a thin film over the top, and it's hard to break through. You can't drink the milk until you break through that little skim. So you skim it off, and that's all right. But that doesn't work with my answer. But I see space-time and time-space not as fragmentized, but as flowing, and we as sailors that from time to time come to these menisci, these moments of resistance where we realize I can get this far but no further, and then there's effort involved in breaking through, and it's a wonderful thing to have a breakthrough in your spiritual life, and that's what that's all about. I believe that when you move from space-time to time-space, you are in the state of awareness that you were in space-time. It's just the analogous time-space. You know in time-space much more than you know in space-time. You are aware of, you see so much more in time-space. I've been there, and I would have no idea how to get there. It comes on me and overtakes me, and there I am for a second or a minute, and Jim's witness to my having been there for 3 days once when I was very, very sick. It was a wonderful place to be, and I kept thinking to myself, why, I wish I could bring this back, but I couldn't. It was a wonderful experience for me, only for me, and it broke through something there in there, an unseen barrier. But I don't think that there's any advantage to being in time-space instead of space-time unless we take that information that we now can see and use it. Using it would undoubtedly cause us to break a great many habits. Habits are hard to break. So I think that there's always an advantage in having information. There's always an advantage in having that metaphysical awareness. But, you know, if you're in the metaphysical world, in time-space, and you haven't decided who you are while you're in space-time, you don't have any footing in time-space. You don't know how to represent yourself. You're just all over the place. You're a mess. You're not able to see anything. So it behooves us to go into time-space and rest in it and just allow that information to flow through us and then come back and use that information in space-time, because we have a space-time incarnation going here. And we came here for a very specific reason. You know, we wanted to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth by the way we lived. When I was talking earlier about being instead of doing, that the love that's inside us, we need to allow it to flow outward and into the world and become lighthouses. We can all do that, but to get your footing, you don't just go into time-space with or without chemical help. I think you're kind of hinting. But you simply have to do the work. And now, I don't think that I don't know anything about seventh density because I hunted around in the Law of One. Jim, correct me if you know something I don't, but I was not able to see that seventh density had any use for a space-time physical vehicle. However, Don asks a question in session 68, and Don says, assume that this is done to a wanderer of sixth density. If this answer violates the first distortion, don't answer. But let's say a sixth density wanderer had this happen and went into negative time space. Would that be a sixth density negative time space, and would he incarnate into sixth density negative space time? Ra says, your assumption is correct. Well, there's space time in sixth density. So sixth density, yes. Seventh density, I'm not sure. Moving on. I'll never make it.
Well, Ra called the seventh density the density of foreverness, which kind of suggests that there really isn't what we would call time there.
Yeah.
And we know there's no body there, that the body has no longer any use in that density.
Right. That's right. So, question, what is the soul? Ra suggests that the soul is a synonym for spirit. And the word soul and spirit are used as if they were synonyms, you know, that they equal each other. So without getting all profound, I think that that we are souls, the infinite part of us, the part of us that is now manifesting in space-time and is holding time and space within us in that electrical body, in the chakras and so forth. That being is the soul. Now, naturally, when we die, we will undoubtedly drop the personality, which certainly in my case is no great loss, and the
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, you know, we all are kind of doofuses. I mean, you know, we're all bozos on this bus is one of my favorite quotes. Anyway, the soul remains. We give the harvest of our witnessing and our experiencing to the Creator, and we move on to more experiences. That is the part of us that is the soul. And what is the soul stream? I did not find that word in Ra, but in Kuo, in the 2010, October 23rd reading, they said, it is our understanding that each of you is part of a soul stream. Now, this is Kuo speaking. You as a soul stream may be considered to be at the center of a three-dimensional, timeless field in which all of the incarnations which you have experienced as an individual in third density, fourth density, fifth, sixth, or seventh density resides. The fruit, the harvest of your incarnation is gathered thankfully and lovingly by the soul stream and by the Creator as you experience life within an incarnation, and most especially as you leave the incarnation and go through the healing process of the review of the incarnation after your physical death and before you choose your next incarnation. Again, Kuo says, it is our understanding that having been reunited with your soul stream and your higher self before you choose the manner of your next incarnation, you carefully consider what you feel may be distorted about the balance of your soul stream. Are you too heavily a creature of love? Can you keep your heart open, but perhaps do not have the wisdom that you would wish you had? Alternatively, are you one who is very wise, but has trouble opening the heart? Or as a third possibility, is your incarnation one which has to do with the right use of power? If so, then you may examine those patterns that repeat in your incarnation, analyzing those patterns for the possibility of an imbalance between power and love or an imbalance between power and wisdom. Going on with Kuo, it is thoughts of this kind that cause you and your higher self to choose the next experience behind the veil of third density. You are always looking as a soul stream to lessen distortion and to increase the balance of your soul stream. By balance, we do not mean to imply that the goal of the soul stream is to achieve indifference or neutrality. Rather, we are suggesting that balance is that which enables the entire energy body to remain open within incarnation so that you may more fully know who you are, you may more fully serve, and you may more fully be the essence of yourself. So the soul stream is the sum of all of your incarnations. You come into this incarnation, as the quote says, one paragraph down. It is as if you chose to go on a journey, taking that which was needed for that journey, some gifts, some talents, some challenges and limitations, and a multitude of possible relationships. This is what the soul stream does before incarnation. The older a soul that you are within one planetary influence, the more relationships that you have had in various incarnations, and the more balances of energy that you have shared with those soul streams in past incarnations, means that you have a wide variety of relationships upon which you have already worked, sometimes again and again. Naturally, you gravitate towards working with these same soul streams when you come back into incarnation, because they are those with whom you have had an instinctive mutual awareness. They are those with whom you have come furthest in understanding, in penetrating the personality shell. They are those with whom you have done good work before. So I think that really nails it as far as soul stream goes. It's as if the soul stream itself, you as your higher self, as the collection of all the incarnations, move into another incarnation with a suitcase in your hand. You can't take everything. Most of what you are is back at that center of that three-dimensional model that they gave. And, of course, that three-dimensional model just completely puts the kibosh on the idea that we have successive incarnations, one, two, three, four. If it's a three-dimensional thing and we go out from the center, well, I think it's a challenging thing. But if you think about it, time does not hold sway in that model. It's more of a time-space thing than a space-time thing. So you have to think in terms of no time, but just a three-dimensional model in which everything is happening at once. And that almost blows your mind to think about, but I think that's the way the soul stream works. Just gradually doing its work, trying incarnation after incarnation to heal the self, bring the self into balance between love and wisdom and power. Let's see, you were still going. What is the spirit shuttle, you said? Well, no, I don't think the spirit is the shuttle. I think that, I mean, the spirit, certainly the spirit is a kind of shuttle. But I don't think that that the body that we are doesn't matter, because I think it's really important. I quote from Ra here. Ra says that the spirit is a shuttle. The spiritual body energy field is a pathway or channel. When body and mind are receptive and open, then the spirit can become a functioning shuttle or communicator from the entity's individual energy of will upwards and from the streamings of the creative fire and wind downwards. The healing ability, like all others, what this instrument would call paranormal abilities, is affected by the opening of a pathway or shuttle into intelligent infinity. There are many upon your plane who have a random hole or gateway in their spirit energy field, sometimes created by the ingestion of chemicals such as what this instrument would call LSD, who are able randomly and without control to tap into energy sources. They may or may not be entities who wish to serve. The purpose of carefully and consciously opening this channel is to serve in a more dependable way, in a more commonplace or usual way, as seen by the distortion complex of the healer. To others, there may appear to be miracles. To the one who has carefully opened the door to intelligent infinity, this is ordinary. This is commonplace. This is as it should be. The life experience becomes transformed, and the great work goes on. That's from Ra Session 80, Question 14. And Monica, did I make it? I think that's the end of the question.
that was a lot of good material there.
I was trying to move it all through because I really love these questions. Siren, these are just bonzo questions, and I hope that we get to the end of your questions and are able to talk about every single one of them, but we probably want to get another question on today. We probably ought to move onward.
Well, actually,
Jim, you or Monica, do you have anything to add to that? Because I just blabbed for a long time. I didn't let anybody in. I wanted to get finished.
I don't think I can add to what you said.
Okay.
Great job.
Yeah, me neither. Actually, the next question we have is also from Siren. We just had this series of questions, and it kind of does continue from that previous question.
Oh,
you
did
address
this one?
No, you didn't. I hadn't read this next one yet. I should have split it up a little differently. But so you address soul and spirit, and the next question is, what is the mind? And could it be the interconnector, the mediator in between the outer, lower, and inner, higher?
Mm-hmm. Well,
sure.
Again, I went to Ra, and Ra answered in session 92, question 19, the questioner, Don, asked her, we were talking about the archetypes. And we were looking at the potentiator of the mind, and Don said, are all activities that the entity has from the state of infancy a function of the potentiator of the mind? And Ra replies this way, firstly, although the function of the mind are indeed paramount over those of the body being the creature of the mind. Certainly not all actions of a mind-body-spirit complex could be seen to be due to the potentiated qualities of the mind complex alone, as the body and in some cases the spirit also potentiates action. Secondly, as a mind-body-spirit complex becomes aware of the process of spiritual evolution, more and more of the activities of the mind and body which precipitate activity are caused by those portions of the mind-body-spirit complex which are articulated by the archetypes of transformation. And then Don asks in session 90, what I'm really asking is what percentage of a part roughly are these responsible for? And Ra once again said, consider that the archetypical mind is a part of the deep mind. There are several portions to this mind. The mind may serve as a resource. To call the archetypal mind the foundation of experience is to oversimplify the activities of the mind-body-spirit complex. To work with your query as to percentages is therefore enough misleading in any form of direct answer that we would ask that you re-question, which he did. And let me look at the question again to see if I missed anything. Could the mind be the interconnector or the mediator in between the outer, lower, and the inner, higher? I don't think so. I don't think it's any sort of a mediator. I see the mind as being part of the tools that we were given, the resources. And I see the mind of the heart. Excuse me. Now I got to wait a minute. My frog has to go. Frig it. that's better. we have the mind of the intellect, and we have the mind of the heart. And say that the mind of the intellect is up here in the cerebellum. We're sitting here, and, you know, like the pictures they show of Einstein with all kinds of ideas coming out and everything. I see the mind as part of our tools, but I don't see it as a whole thing because we have the mind of the heart. And when we get into the open heart and we open our hearts, there's a consciousness there that we can sort of ping for authenticity. Are we being authentically of service to others? Ping. Well, the mind of the heart will say, I see no insight into what you're doing right now. I think you're grasping, you know. Or, yes, you're being of service to others, you know. so I can honestly say that I value the intellect greatly. But, you know, it is supposed to be a steed upon which we ride. We have the reins, and we direct it whither we wish to go. So often, people with a lot of mind, big brains, you know, able to think marvelous thoughts and carry on indefinitely, allow that mind to ride them. So there you are, an intellect galloping without any rein, without any guiding idea as to why and what you're doing. I think that if there is a middle between the mind of the mind and the mind of the heart, it would be our intentions. By intention, I think we can choose the mind of the heart. So I try, certainly, in all decisions that seem to me to be important, to rest in them long enough to get an idea that seems spiritually sound as to why I would do something or not do something. Does that make sense? What do you think?
I think it does.
Jim, what do you have?
We have two votes for yes.
Okay. Well, you know, there's only a minute or so left, right? Is that accurate?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to answer a question that's been hanging around. It's not even on Monica's list anymore, and I feel sad for the person that asked it, and now I can't find it. Oh, heavenly days. Here it is. No, that's not it either. Okay, I was gonna pull a really good thing, but apparently here it is. Ta-da! Paper, rattle, rattle, rattle. Sorry about that. Shin R. asked, what are your thoughts about the differences that exist between Ra's explanation of self-serving and that of Hatan and Latui, where Hatan seems to be far more precise about the dangers of partaking in self-serving attitudes and how the darkness is such a problem upon mankind? I think that in early fourth density, there is still a war going on, just like in third density, the war between heaven and earth. You read about it in the Bible. And I believe it's quite real, and people feel, well, we must fight evil, we must fight the darkness. And I think as you become more and more spiritually mature, you become able to see, no, we do not have to fight the darkness. Light overcomes darkness. You know, that's also written in the Bible in the first chapter of the book of John. So there's where I think Hatan differs from Latui and Ra. It's because they have, by gaining more and more experience and graduating into fifth density and then sixth density for Ra, they have been able to see that the darkness is not something to be fought. The darkness is something to be loved and asked to serve the light. And gradually, gradually, that happens. It's hard to see and it's hard to believe, but that's the way the Creator offered us the experience of darkness. It's very real in the density of now, but in the next density and fourth density, we gradually get beyond it. How's that for a two-minute thing, Monica?
Boy, I think you set a record there.
Okay. I just wanted to answer Shinar after all this time.
I didn't realize that had been missed, so I'm glad you found that. And,
yeah,
you set a record for dealing with some deep, profound topic very quickly. So thank you, Carla, and thank you, Jim. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit websites llresearch.org, the archive website, which has all our Law of One channeling transcripts and lots more, and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org for the LL Research community website. Thanks so much for listening. You can feel free to submit questions at Bring Forth Forums, the bringforth.org, or you can just call in live next week. We are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We'll be here next Friday on 1st. We will see you then. Have a great week.